At Subway, start 2010 right with surprisingly low-fat choices. The Piled High Subway Club or Turkey Melt, fresh toasted under bubbly cheese. Both are part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal, a simple way to enjoy eating better. Subway, eat fresh. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Wanted to apologize for the technical difficulties in Monday's Mega Playoff podcast. Joe Mead, what do you have to say for yourself?
It's not my fault.
Why don't you take responsibility? I think if there are technical difficulties on your watch, it's your fault.
Oh, I know. I'm the face of the difficulties, but I'm not giving up my job over it.
So what happens when we have technical difficulties like that?
Well, you know, sometimes the servers are slow and it's tough to upload these huge files. And when that happens, a small number of people may see some issues, but the vast majority should have gotten the file just fine. I hope everyone enjoyed it.
So should we go to a part one, part two for these mega playoffs or no?
No. When there's issues, it wouldn't make a difference if it was split in half or not.
Okay. Well, we apologize. I think we only – this happens like 3-4 times a year and that's it. Maybe even less? Like twice a year?
Probably less. Yeah. Put the over under it too. I'll take the under.
Well, we're never happy when it happens. Joe agonizes about it. I agonize about it. And we'd like to give you a full refund for Monday's podcast. That's fair, right, Joe?
I think so.
All right.
I gave back my salary for yesterday's work.
Full refund for yesterday's podcast. Sorry about that. Next week, hopefully it will go better. But today's podcast, I don't want to call it a mega, but with all this Gilbert Arenas going on, who better to give his take than our friend Joe House in Washington, D.C.? He's on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. What's happening?
I have a suggestion.
Yeah.
Has a winner been determined yet on your season-long wager with Sal on the lines of the NFL games?
If I win one more week, I clinch.
Okay,
it's basically come down to my magic number is one.
Here's my suggestion.
Yeah.
I think you get Subway to whip you up three fantastical sandwiches. You take those sandwiches. You find Sal's cubicle at Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Yeah.
You stick them in there with a note. It says, pick one. That's my suggestion.
I like it.
Pick one.
You know, unfortunately, in real life, I think any sort of pick one scenario with any sort of weapon gets you fired. But in the NBA, it's unclear what's going to happen.
And a Subway sandwich is not a weapon.
Well, it could be if you
loaded
it.
9.5 times out of 10.
Could be if you loaded it up with the focaccia and steak and all kinds of stuff. Yeah,
that's right. The deadly focaccia.
We're pretty excited. All right, well, let's start with this Gilbert thing let's start with the chronology because it became pretty clear after about 2 days that the New York Post had the story wrong and that they did have parts of the story, but ultimately it was not the correct story because they changed what they were writing after 2 days. Initially, the story was that Gilbert Arenas and Javaris Crittenden drew guns on one another in the locker room after a poker game gone wrong. So as the details have emerged, that actually wasn't the case. Why don't you explain your theory, which is pretty much the consensus theory now of what actually happened?
Well, I want to start with a different chronology because I'm still having a lot of anxiety and self-doubt over this. I, at your great suggestion and graces, prepared a writing for Great Call of the Week back at the beginning of Christmas week, right before Christmas.
Oh, yeah, where you urged the Wizards to go back to the Bullets.
That's right, to go back to the Bullets. That was published on the 23rd on ESPN.com. On the 24th were the first reports of, guns being in the Verizon Center and all the rest of it. And what I'd like to say in my own defense, how did I know they were going to take this literally? I mean, that wasn't a literal suggestion to Javaris and Gilbert. I wasn't saying bullets. I wanted to bring back the the chemistry and the vibe and the love of those old teams.
Well, that was the real tragedy here, is now the Bullets can't happen.
Yeah, that's just
now
not added.
That's now off the table.
Off the table.
Still on the table, Gilbert's three guns.
or four. It's three or four, but right. To get to your question, the chronology that makes the most sense to me and the one that I've seen and seems the most credible because it's been reported by credible people like Mark
Multiples.
Stein. Is the fact that on the flight home after a horrendous, inexplicable loss to Phoenix where the team barely showed up, guys were sitting in the back of the plane playing cards, and at least three of the people were Gilbert and JaVale McGee and Javaris. And it sounds like Javaris and Gilbert were on the wrong end of whatever game they were playing, and JaVale was the big winner. And it sounds like the arrangement that Gilbert and Javaris made with it was that Javaris was going to cover the whole kitty on the premise that Gilbert would pay him back, or some variation on that, because Gilbert also, it sounds like, objected to the results and the outcomes of the game and was.
Hold on, let's stop here.
Go ahead.
So it seems like there were some rules that Gilbert didn't totally either understand or like, and then he objected, but the game kept going, and then he lost, and then he's like, I don't want to pay, that was stupid. And they had a big argument, and then Javaris Crittenden said, I'll front you the money.
And you know what? That's very consistent. That little phenomena that you just described, we've seen this from Gilbert over the entirety of his tenure with the Wizards in shooting games, you know, where there's YouTubes. You can go online and watch him compete against, I think it's Deshaun Stevenson, where he's changing the rules as they're playing along. I mean, he's kind of notorious for being sneaky and sly like that.
Right.
If it looks like he's going to lose, he changes things up.
Okay.
So that's consistent. You know, that makes sense. There's a logic to that.
We have an established history of him objecting with the rules. Also, you know who else has this problem? Matthew Berry, apparently. No, seriously.
Why, apparently, was he not satisfied with your horrendous goatee 2 weeks ago or whatever?
No, he you know, we had that fantasy basketball league with him, and he changed the rules.
Oh, that's right.
He suggested this weird percentage thing that none of us had prepared for and roped us in, and then we talked to somebody who was in multiple leagues with Barry once upon a time and said Barry was notorious for last-minute rule wrinkles that always somehow benefited him.
Well,
I'd like to see him and Gilbert Arenas play cards together.
I can't give Matthew a hard time because he's not here to defend himself, and he did manage to get our league off the ground when it looked like
that's true.
We weren't going to be able to do it this year.
Very good point. So Gilbert, somehow, the part that I'm confused by is why Gilbert and Javaris got mad at each other. It seemed like JaVale McGee should have been mad at Gilbert, but instead somehow Crittenden got mad at him.
Well, I think Crittenden got mad at him because, you know, Crittenden agreed to front the money, and then it seemed like Gilbert almost immediately was waffling on making Crittenden whole. That's the way, you know, that's the read that I have on the thing.
So, and by the way, we should mention this is all conjecture.
Speculation.
It's we're all speculating. I think, Joe Mead, this is legal for us to speculate on what might have happened, right?
We'll find out in post.
All right. You can expect this podcast to be up in mid-February. So anyway.
We're just trying to fill in the gaps. Quite a bit of this has been reported.
Yeah, by multiple people.
Yeah, that's right.
So at some point it became heated, and it went back and forth, and Gilbert is, I forget who wrote this. But I liked it, the way they put it, that Gilbert was kind of an unfair match. He's a little bit of a verbal bully because he's got a sense of humor, and he can kind of push it too far with
the
other
guys. He's an agitator.
He's an agitator.
He's like he's a Cousin Sal.
He's a Cousin Sal.
Yeah.
He's
an instigator
Gilbert.
And an agitator.
So this made Crittenden mad, and eventually he threatened to allegedly shoot Gilbert in the knee.
Well, and in fact, I read an account over the last handful of days where the specific way it evolved was Gilbert threatened to burn Javaris' car, and Javaris, in response, threatened to shoot Gilbert in the knee. So it was that kind of horseplay.
And he said his bad knee.
Yeah, and his bad knee. But that kind of, you know, that kind of rough talk that men sometimes engage in.
Except for us. I don't ever remember us getting mad at each other and you threatening to burn my car and me threatening to shoot your bad knee.
Not even 15 years ago? I'm trying to think. We were young. I guess not.
I don't ever remember us really getting in a fight.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, I don't remember ever witnessing a fight where somebody threatened to shoot somebody else in their bad knee. So this is a first for me.
Well, there's a cultural difference there.
Okay. Anyway.
We don't talk that way, but some people do.
So the Wiz have a day off the next day. Practice the following day.
Right.
Gilbert, by various accounts, it all seems like Gilbert was trying to make light of what had happened on the plane and pulled out his guns.
The guns that he had transported out of his house deliberately, and I think this is actually, it has the ring of truthiness. Mm. He took the guns out of his house because he just had his third kid, and he doesn't need the guns in the house anymore.
Well, I think that's a flawed argument, because if you have a newborn baby,
yeah,
why would that then cause you to pull the guns out of your house? Wouldn't you say, like, oh, my kid just turned 4. He's crawling around. Yesterday we found him in my wife's closet.
Well, no, it's a combo deal, though. He does have a kid who's in that sort of age range, who just had a birthday somewhat recently.
But my point is, that would be the argument you made. My kid just turned 3, and he's constantly in our stuff, and I got scared. The fact that you had a newborn shouldn't affect whether you have guns in the house or not.
Well,
newborns
don't
move for 8 months.
He has a newborn, and he has 2 young children also, one of whom might be in that 3 to 4 range, but I get what you're saying.
It seems like an alibi, and it seems, in my opinion, it seems like he brought the guns in that morning.
I see.
To play the prank on Clinton.
So you're not giving him credit for the unrelated, that you think the guns were deliberately delivered to the Verizon Center.
Well, also, I've been in NBA locker rooms.
Yeah.
And it's not like the Y, or it's not like high school where the lockers close and shut. Like, a lot of them you can just see into.
Yeah. Now, he had a lockbox.
Oh, he had a lockbox.
Yes, and that's where the guns went. I mean, at the very beginning...
It's got to be a pretty big lockbox, though.
Yeah.
With 3 guns. I mean, that's got to be a sizable lockbox.
Who knows? He can afford a sizable lockbox. He already has, 20% of the $100 million.
All right, well, whenever the guns got in there, we can all agree, he put the guns on either a chair or the stool or whatever in front of him and told Crittenden to pick one to
right.
shoot his knee.
Well,
Crittenden did not think this was funny.
The account that I saw suggested there was a note, that he put a note, the guns and a note, that Crittenden was not in the locker room when Gilbert, initiated the prank, but then
right.
Crittenden came in later, saw the guns and the note, and grew enraged at the gesture.
And here's where it becomes a problem. Because now you have one guy who's enraged at another guy, their teammates, and there are 3 guns between them.
I think that's a problem.
That's a problem. And, and the Post got the story wrong. They said that they drew guns on each other, which, as we're finding out, was not true.
The New York Post.
And now they've, when they write about it, they do not write anymore that they drew guns on each other.
Well,
is unfair.
It's unfair. I mean, that's the mini rant that I shared with you, and a couple times we've chatted over the weekend about this. The story that hit every newswire in the country on January the 1st was players draw guns on one another. And in fact, as part of that New York Post story, they elicited a comment from Billy Hunter about players pulling guns on each other.
Now, and he was shocked.
I find that so irresponsible, but I guess, in this sort of day and age where there's no sort of media accountability anymore, the best you can hope for is that somebody sues somebody to try and get the record straight, but it doesn't seem like much of a threat. But I mean, the whole country heard NBA guys pull guns on one another, and that's just a lie. It's not true.
And then in this era, you have the blogs and you have Twitter, so everybody's got to weigh in or have their little joke. My joke was that this is my favorite duel since Hamilton and Burr, or something
like
that.
Joke,
yeah, it was a good one. Solid joke. Solid historical joke.
That's right.
I forget what else I wrote, but everybody had their take, it reminded me a little bit of when the Cowboys, when they had the White House,
yes,
when they were accused of like just gang raping strippers or whatever it was, and it was front page Cowboys rape White House, and then it a few months later turned out not to be true, and it runs on page 8.
Right.
Hey, that wasn't true. But meanwhile, everybody. Half the people still think it's true because they read it once upon a time.
Yeah, no, I mean, slowest news day, one of the slowest news days of the year.
Yeah.
It's like the lead item on most broadcasts and newspapers and blogs and the rest of it.
All right, so that was unfair. So it seems like the outcome of this was that Crittenden, it made him madder that Gilbert did the gun sting. They argued, and I read in a couple places by reputable reporters that he threw one of the guns, which
is pretty dangerous in itself. And all that too escalates the thing. You know, part of Gilbert's statement yesterday was, you know, his confession of bad judgment, you know, the mistake that he made in bringing them down there without ammunition and all the rest of it. But, you know, anything that would involve somebody putting their hands on that thing and throwing it or
right.
anything like that, that escalates it.
Now, the
as far
two
as
things.
I'm concerned.
You think so, Doc? Ladies and gentlemen, we're here with Troy Aikman on the BS Report. Troy, you didn't like that joke?
Anytime you put your hands on a gun and throw it, that's going to be a problem.
The key to winning this game is going to be who scores more points. So we have two unanswered questions. The first is whether the guns were loaded, which I've read varying accounts on. Do we know if they were loaded?
I haven't read a single account that suggests the guns were loaded.
So they had no bullets in them.
That's not only did the guns not have any bullets, but there's no ammunition in that locker room.
But so he had empty guns.
He had empty guns, and
but
there
do
were
we
no
know
other...
that for sure, though?
Well, how can you know anything for sure?
But what if they were loaded? I mean, to me, that's the $64,000 question. If they were unloaded guns. You know, I think I feel differently about the incident than if he brought three loaded guns into the thing and then Crittenden threw one of them.
Oh, I mean, that would be, then there would be, I think,
that's
without
a
doubt, felony criminal charges brought.
That's a felony criminal charge.
I think the arrest would have occurred, you know, yesterday or today. I don't know that they're convening a grand jury from what I understand. I mean, I saw at least one indication that the city's convening a grand jury or the federal district court here is convening a grand jury because there's federal charges. Because, you know, the unique nature of D.C. as a federal enclave. Complicates the law, but what it means for anybody that commits crimes involving guns in this city is bad things. But in any event, if those things are loaded, we'll see an arrest pretty soon, I imagine.
Yes, and that's a felony, and the key part to all of this, like forget about Gilbert going to jail, all that stuff. If you're a Wizards fan, the key part to all of this is you get to void his contract.
Well, and that's
you get to start over.
You know, that's the most... sort of prominent, mixed feeling, mixed emotion element to all this, you know, I'm kind of put in this awkward position of maybe rooting for a bad thing to come to befall Gilbert because of this.
Why maybe? you get to basically reinvent your franchise. He makes $22 million a year. It's the worst contract in the league. I would say it's the number one untradeable contract in basketball because of the duration and the price tag.
I just want to have one quick mini rant on that proposition, which is how can this franchise do that twice to me in 15 years? How can one franchise in 15 years twice have the single worst contract in the whole league? Because their Juwan Howard contract was widely regarded as the single worst contract in the league. Indefensible, an albatross around a team's neck. It stymied their ability to do anything for 3 or 4 years, and they repeat that very same mistake barely 10 years later. How is that possible?
The difference this time was that Gilbert had a bad knee, and they gave him all kinds of extra money anyway. Like he really had no leverage to get more than I think 80.
Well,
and they gave him 122.
That Golden State put an offer on the table of 107. I think that, you know, the historical record contains that. And the answer to that is, bye-bye. Good
Take
luck,
em.
My brother.
Take him.
Right. That was the answer. That was the easy answer then. And it remains, you know, even more sort of poignantly the right answer today.
So the key to the bullets.
Yeah.
Now the Wizards.
Yes.
Is whether Gilbert's gun had bullets in it. Ironically, bullets could save the bullets.
It is an irony. In that respect, I feel somewhat vindicated. I think my great call of the week could still be a great call.
Yeah. All right. So that to me, that is the one part of this. The other component is that we don't know who was in the locker room, how many people were there.
Right.
If there were 20 people there and Crittenden throws a gun, that's a little weird. I mean, that now scares people. It scares coworkers. Now, this goes to we were arguing last night. I was saying Gilbert should go to jail. And... you were like, you know, it's not that bad. He shouldn't. Or no, I was saying that I thought they should void Gilbert's contract and he'd get suspended for the year or whatever. And you were saying, no, you know. But,
well, I'm not sure about that, you know, what their sort of basis they have. That's why my response was, look, this is a league where a player choked his coach and they tried to void the contract and they weren't successful. I mean, forget about bringing something into the locker room. The man put his hands on the coach's throat. They tried to void the contract and the arbitrator upheld, you know, the player on that one.
Right. Well, you had the difference, I think, was in 1997, the players' union had a hell of a lot more power than they have now. I don't think that. I think
that's true. That happened before the 99 lockout, right?
The 99 lockout changed that equation, and Stern now has the power. And plus, you know, the league is much more concerned about image than it used to be. It's got more stuff built into contracts. You know, it's like you can't have guns. It's in the collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah,
you can't have
yeah.
guns in an NBA workplace. So right there, the contract's voidable. If the gun had bullets, I think it's a slam dunk. Like, they could just void it.
Well, that is the other thing we were talking about last night. It's not just that you can't have a gun in an NBA workplace. There ain't a workplace in the country you can have a gun.
Yeah.
Other than a gun show.
Well, this was the argument I made to you last night, was that if you got into an argument with one of your coworkers 2 days ago at some poker game at somebody's house,
yeah.
and one of you threatened to shoot the other.
Even if it was in fun.
And then 2 days later, in your office, one of you put out three guns or four guns, whatever it was, and told the other guy to pick one, you both get fired.
Immediately.
It's not even like what the guy with the guns get fired. I think the boss was like, you know what? You both have to go. Just leave.
That's interesting.
And maybe the other guy could appeal and get back his job, but the point is this, the guy who puts out the gun gets fired.
The guy who brings a gun to work gets fired.
You
every
get fired.
Workplace in this country, you can't bring a gun to work.
So
it's
there are a couple
them all.
And there are a couple other things here, and this is what Stern, you know, he's famous for taking an issue that he already was kind of passionate about and then using whatever the catalyst was to going overboard with it. We saw it with the Artest melee. He, you know, he wanted to make the point that nobody was allowed in the stands anymore. Can't do that. It will never happen again. So he suspends Artest for the year. They put in new penalties. I think this will be... You might even see two causes here. The first one is going to be they will say with certain language, nobody can have a gun in an arena, in a locker room, anything.
Right.
If we find a gun, if you have a gun, if anything happens, you're out of the league, voided contract. And then the second one, I think they've been dying to do this, and I've heard rumors about this for 2-3 years. I think they've been really trying to figure out a way to get rid of these poker games because – you know, and I've written this. I've either written this or said this in a podcast and made the prediction that at some point in the next 5 years, 10 years, somebody was going to shoot somebody else over a poker game. Because this is what these guys do on these planes. And they play for big money, and guys owe $100,000, $150,000. There's the famous incident with Charles Oakley when, you know, he was basically stalking Tyrone Hill over a gambling debt, and they got in a fight. And at some point, this is going to get ugly, and I don't think the league really knows how to govern this.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a problem. I mean, it's part of the culture. They use the games to blow off steam, but the stakes get so crazy because the amount of money that are at stake.
Because they're all competitive.
And they're all competitive. That's right. And you know, it's now been demonstrated beyond a reasonable doubt that kind of anything's possible. And you're right. There are incidents in the past between players. I mean, you twittered this in the last couple of weeks. Every fight between professional basketball players is over a woman or a gambling debt.
Right. And that's even a footnote in my book. It's something that I forget which one of my NBA friends told me that one. But anytime you hear about there's been bad blood with these guys for years, or these guys have never liked each other, or Team A played Team B and for the third time in 2 years, Player A and Player B got into some sort of tiff. It's not because that one guy doesn't like the other's BO.
That's right.
There are real reasons behind it, and it's a girl or it's a gambling. I think the one exception is the time Chris Mills got mad at Bonzi Wells during a game and then parked his car in front of the Blazers team bus and wouldn't let it leave until Bonzi Wells came out. That seemed like that was the heat of the moment and happened in the game kind of feud. And now, you know, just for the first time this past week, it wasn't reported, but it was mentioned that the urban legend was always that Mills had had a gun.
Oh.
And I'd never heard that before, and I don't know if it's true, but they, but if you Google Chris Mills gun Bonzi Wells, it will pop up on some things. And I guess it had been always been the rumor that he had the gun. I've never heard that confirmed, but I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
That would have been awesome.
I think in some ways, I guess, you know, I'm a little surprised that, that something involving guns hasn't occurred already. I mean, I'm thankful of it. But, you know, in view of some of the things that have occurred in the past and some of the backgrounds of folks, I mean, players have been shot. Lloyd Daniels was shot, but that was, you know, not tied to his playing days exactly.
Well, and also the Plaxburris thing and the fact that it's funny because Marcellus Wiley, like 2 weeks ago on TV, was talking about it was very, I don't want to say eloquently, but very in a detailed way about why professional athletes carry guns.
Uh-huh.
And he was talking about a lot of these guys come from bad backgrounds and, you know, they go back to their old neighborhood to see their grandma or their mom or, you know, their best friend from growing up or whatever. And there's an element there that maybe try to start with them or whatever. And they don't feel that safe. And that's how they end up in the habit of packing.
So let's pick up on that. How would you square whatever punishment is going to get lined up for Gilbert with whatever punishment is maybe in the works for Delonte West?
That's a great question.
I mean, cause
Delonte wasn't carrying guns in any sort of NBA related anything.
No, that's right.
On his own, and it was the off season.
But he had loaded weapons on his person.
Right. Well, then Devin Harris, I think it was Devin Harris, said that what he put the 75% number out there for NBA players and guns.
Which, yeah, that was Devin Harris. You're right.
Which was shocking. And it actually reminded me a little bit of when the cocaine thing really took off with the NBA and people started writing about it in the late 70s, early 80s. And I was researching my book and there was some LA Times article and the Hawks GM at the time, Stan Kasten, said that he estimated 75% to 80% of the players were using cocaine. And everybody was just stunned by that number. And then Buck Williams gave some sort of speech a couple months later. And he was like, that was such a ridiculous figure. There's no way it's more than 40%. But it's still 40%, Buck.
And did he say, for cocaine, there's no way it's 80%. Marijuana, it's probably that.
Well,
that.
We saw cocaine was the big thing in the 80s that they fixed. Marijuana was the big thing in the 90s and the early part of this decade that they've at least made somewhat of an effort to fix. And it's so tough to, you know, totally get rid of it. But I think now guns will be the new thing for Stern.
Well,
I really
hope, you know, they figure out a way to get these guys to stop carrying them. Because I love the NBA. I'm a consumer of the product of the league, and you know, I don't want any bad to befall any of these guys.
Well, do you think Stern made a mistake with Plax after Plax maybe coming out and being like, hey, just to we're gonna revamp our gun rules here on the fly?
I don't think so. I mean, shouldn't it speak for itself? They already have the rule. You can't bring the gun anywhere near the stadium for any reason. They already have that rule.
Yeah, but see, I feel like I want to see the language in that because the players' union could contest it with loaded versus unloaded. They could say, "Hey, it wasn't loaded."
No, I don't think the language in the collective bargaining agreement says anything about loaded versus unloaded.
All right. Well, this leads me to my next question then. Now, this story got out, and this story was also reported to NBA security. And as it turns out, by multiple reports, the guy who reported it to NBA security was Ernie Grunfeld,
right?
The GM who stupidly signed Gilbert Arenas to his awful contract. To me, this looks like a blatant case of, oh, here's my loophole. I can get out of this.
Well, I think, you know, I have two thoughts on that. First, I'm not 100% positive that Ernie bears 100% responsibility for that terrible contract. The Bullets Wizards over the years demonstrated that these mega contracts were a way that Abe Pollin would reward players. You know, he had this tendency to sometimes give contracts to guys for past good works so that, you know, it actually, these contracts in some ways function like a normal bonus that a normal employee would get in a normal workplace. You did a great job last year. Here's your bonus. The problem was and continues to be, that in this, you know, collective bargaining agreement arena with salary caps and all the rest of it, that model doesn't work. And what you do when you try and reward people that way is cripple your franchise. But in that respect, I think Grunfeld, you know, may have been doing some of the owner's bidding. Now, he didn't, you know, put his job on the line over it, but
okay, but admit that it would make his life a lot easier if Gilbert Arenas was no longer on his salary cap.
I think that's a fact. I can't come up with an argument against it.
I mean, basically, if they really think that he might get voided, they could then trade Antoine Jameson for Ilgauskas and build the team around Butler and their young guys who really aren't that good, but whatever, and then basically $40 million of cap space and your lottery pick from last year that you didn't draft.
but they're lined up to have a good lottery pick this year as well. And so if they go that route, we should get a decent pick.
What do people in Washington say about this whole thing? I mean, this has to be the number one water cooler topic replacing
Tiger. It's the wrong thing at the wrong time with another Washington sports franchise. I mean, it couldn't have been worse time, worse place. Because as it is, you know, we're in a city where the bitter taste of the Redskins is still in everybody's mouths. Another, underperforming, overpromising, expectations completely out of whack in terms of what the product was actually going to deliver. A team that's been mismanaged for a dozen years.
I can't believe the coach list. They showed the coach list yesterday. They've had, not counting the interim guy who coached for like four games, but they've had six coaches from 2009 to 2009.
Yeah, I mean they've
that's incredible.
There has been, you know, some folks have tried to say that that Snyder wasn't totally responsible for that North Turner wasn't his guy. He inherited him, so that doesn't count against the number. And the interim coach, this guy Terry Rubisky,
right,
ought not to count against the number either. I don't really subscribe to that. But either way, it's 5 to 7 coaches over about a 10-year span. That's exactly right.
And
the most inexplicable and indefensible one to this day remains Marty Schottenheimer for Steve Spurrier.
Marty Schottenheimer getting canned after
one
really
season,
not a bad ending.
7-1 the team went over the last 8 games, and they fired him to hire Steve Spurrier to go 12-20.
Who everybody who knew him said he's going to be terrible for the NFL. He works 6-hour days.
That's right.
We talked about this over the holidays, that the Washington area has not had a marquee superstar that you would go and spend money to see, even if you didn't have a lot of money, like the same way like when Boston had Pedro once upon a time, or Larry Bird or Brady, people like that. And you said Ovechkin is that guy.
The first time in my life that a Washington sports team has had arguably the best player in the sport.
Right.
Not just the best player, but also plays a style that's so fan-friendly, so easy to get behind. I jumped on. I've been a season ticket holder of the Caps 2 or 3 times over the years. My father was an original season ticket holder in 1974, so I grew up with hockey in my life. And, you know, I wrote off hockey around the lockout. But I'm back. I'm a season ticket holder this year.
So Ovechkin for that. The situation, Steven Strasburg for the Nationals.
Who gave him that name?
I gave it to him right now.
Oh, no.
We need a situation in sports.
We do need a situation in sports, but I don't know if it's Steven Strasburg.
Do you like Anchorman?
Anchorman? Anchorman. I feel that. I like that a lot better.
What was the there's another one we were thinking of with something with Washington, like the Chief Justice or something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones in that.
I like the situation because he has the SS, so he's the situation Steven Strasburg.
I don't, the situation should go to somebody in New Jersey, though.
Maybe it should be Gilbert Arenas.
He is a situation.
Anyway, you have Strasburg. People are excited about him.
Absolutely.
You have, you know, if you get a real, I wouldn't be that excited about Shanahan because I think he's a little long in the tooth.
Yeah.
What coach would you be excited about? I think
Bill Cowher.
Bill Cowher.
That's the answer to me. That's my answer. Sorry. I didn't mean to repeat it so many times.
And then in basketball, you potentially have like $35 million in cap space this summer.
Well, it depends on what happens with Arenas. They either have $35 million or they have none.
Well,
it's one or the other.
You said it would be a classic Wizards scenario if if this thing dragged out and on August 15th, after everybody had signed, that they were like, oh, yeah, the Wizards, we're going to void Arenas' contract.
Yeah, right.
And they just have a ton of money without being able to do anything.
That's whiz luck. That's what I would call that. That would be exactly, you know, the kind of thing that would occur here. The legal proceedings involving his contract and disentangling themselves would drag out just long enough to eliminate the Wiz from any serious contention in the free agent bidding. So they were sitting there in August or September, you know, looking at, Rasul Butler or somebody.
Ted Leonsis?
Love him.
He's taken over, right?
I hope so. I mean, all indications are go. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. You know, the price of the downtown stadium plus the Ticketmaster brand has gone up because Poland did a really good job of notwithstanding kind of the products that he was putting out there. It's worth a lot. That downtown area has really grown up. But the indication is that he's psyched to do it, and I'm psyched for him to do it.
So your final take is that you'd feel it sounds like you're a little torn because you did like Arenas. He was your favorite Wiz in a long time.
That's right. He's likable, and he ushered in an era where I got to go to NBA playoff games. I watched the Wizards win a first round playoff series in person against the Chicago Bulls. So he brought the NBA. Back for me. I mean, I've always been a deep NBA fan. You know that. But, we got to be in the playoffs a handful of years, and he gets a lot of credit for that. Plus, he was exciting. He was winning games at the end of games, unstoppable.
And kind of a fascinating guy, too.
On top of all of it.
Yeah. I thought his Twitter stuff this week kind of made me feel bad.
Yeah, that's
delighting in the story. He's almost, I don't want to say mentally ill, but there's definitely something really off with him.
Yeah, well, and it's...
You cannot make light of this crap. It's too serious, and it's like, you can't play the whole, this is just me, I joke around. It's like, dude, you're about to lose $100 million.
Yeah, it's...
This is not funny.
It's an understatement. You know, bad judgment. You know, dude, he gave almost a childlike kind of explanation for what happened.
I mean, and it seems like he's been very available talking to reporters and all kinds of things, and... I was with somebody last night. I think it was Jacoby. And we were saying how, like, when the Sean Marion and tequila thing happened, Sean Marion was just like, it's not true. I will be vindicated. That's all I'm going to say right now.
Right.
That was it. I think that's what Gilbert should have done. And
he's been giving interviews almost every day since the New Year's thing broke. He talked to people on the first. I think he talked to folks or Twittered every day. Right.
I mean, there's bad for him.
It's worse than bad judgment. You know, it's indicative of kind of an approach to life that shows, you know, not full development. Not to get super psychological, but
well, and that was, you know, why he fell in the draft. That was why he had some problems in college.
Right.
That was why he had some major adjustment problems the first couple of years as a pro. And he was, you know, he's not from a good background at all. He's from one of the worst parts of L.A., if I remember correctly. And,
This is a lack of maturity that's stunted his ability to be a leader the entirety of the time he's been in the league. And it's why you couldn't give him that $111 million contract when the team was confronted with that 2 years ago.
You can't wish
for him to be a leader.
Well, this story really brought everything I like and don't like about the NBA to the table at the same time. It's the craziest league. There's no question. It's the most fascinating league to follow. It's the league that kind of combines the most cultural things, and you can read into a lot of stuff, and it's funny. Like, this story was not funny, but it was also had some funny elements.
Very funny.
I'm going to shoot you in your bad knee, stuff like that.
Right.
And then ultimately kind of sad.
Yeah. The whole range of emotions.
Are we – a serious question. Are white people allowed to play that game that they're playing? Boule, or whatever it's called. What's it called?
Oh, I don't know. That's the thing.
Hey,
I
Boule?
Never saw. Is that the game they were playing?
I always thought they played Bid Whist on the planes.
They played a game called Tonk. There's a game called Tonk that I know.
These games?
They're all Bid games. They're like Whist and Pinochle and Spades and Hearts. I think they're all just derivatives.
Well, here's my question. Because it sounds like these are the most action-packed games you could ever watch, and they frequently evolve into heated arguments and violence. Why aren't we televising the World Series of Bidwist?
The World Series of Tonk.
The World Series of Tonk.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's exactly. This is brilliant.
How great would that be? It would be fantastic.
They all have their own money up. Winner takes all.
World Series of Celebrity Tonk.
You need to get in touch with LeBron's people and sell that.
Coming up in the quarterfinals, LeBron James takes on Chris Brown.
He can host it. He has the casino in his basement, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he has the whole thing. When he hosts people, he hosts events at his house, doesn't he?
And also, like, JaVale McGee. How much money could he be making? Like, $1 million a year? $1.2 million?
No, that's an excellent... That's exactly right.
How is he in a card game where he could either win or lose $60,000?
It's a terrific question. I mean, that's exactly right. His financial advisor is not pleased right now with these reports.
A lot of questions. A lot of lingering questions. Joe House, as always, thanks for being on the BS Report. Talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure.
One follow-up to the House podcast, which we just finished. As we were taping it, TMZ reported that Gilbert did not have a license for his guns. So that pushes this into a whole other territory possible. Pretty sure that's a felony if you are found with guns on you, but you don't. Who knows? Stay tuned for that. The story is developing. And now, speaking of developing stories, the Red Sox made a big free agent signing. I'm happy about it. I'm not happy about it. I don't know how I feel, but in these moments, we call our friend Jacko, the biggest Yankee fan I know. He's on the Subway Fresh Take hotline right now. Let's give him a ring at work.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Oh, Johnny.
That is the sound of a man whose team just signed Adrian Beltre. You all right? You okay?
Here's my New Year's resolution
Let's talk about it.
My New Year's resolution 2 days late. I want the Red Sox to sign a free agent that the other fans of the team don't taunt me immediately after it. The team that he's leaving, I'm not getting taunting emails from that guy's fans. I want to sign a free agent that the other team's fans are going, you know what? That guy's great. You're going to love that guy.
Geez, if you believe the Boston Globe website and Red Sox commenters, it's like they just signed Brooks Robinson in his heyday.
I've had
Brooks Robinson of today.
I tweeted about this, but I've had a soft spot for Beltre for years, and I always end up with him in fantasy because he's a notorious slow starter.
Right.
And right around June, I always try to trade for him because, you know, he's just wasting away like hydrochloric acid on somebody's team, and they just want to get rid of him, and then he'll get hot during the summer. I don't think that's going to go over that well in Boston. If he's hitting 185 on May 29th, it's not going to be like when you're hitting 185 in Seattle.
Right.
Everybody's like, I'm going to go for a hike.
Yeah.
In Boston, I'm like, hey, Adrian Beltre said he 185. Let's go to the game and yell things at him.
Exactly. Throw beers at him. Right.
It's not going to go well.
No, not at all.
I will say, though, that the defense thing, at least they've stuck with a theme for this year's team.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're selling their fans and supporters a bill of goods. As I said to you in an email earlier, I think Theo's like Houdini. He's like, pay no attention to our lack of upgrading our anemic offense over here. Hey, look at this defense we have over here.
Yeah.
I mean, like, pitching and defense is going to be the big key to success in the American League East. Well, when last year your biggest problem was your offense was pathetic. And you and I have talked about this ad infinitum, but there's not one guy in your lineup that frightens me as a Yankee fan. Not one. Victor Martinez is a little frisky, but I'll take my chances with Victor Martinez. You won the World Series in 2004 and 2007 because you had the most feared 1-2 punch since Ruth and Garrick. Now, we've learned after the fact, of course, that was all PED-aided, but still, nonetheless, they were the most feared 1-2 punch in baseball.
My concern is this. It does seem like the teams that have consistently won the World Series are teams that have had two and possibly three quality starters, a closer that actually comes through, and then offense.
Right.
And that's happened basically, I would say, the 09 Yankees? Yes.
Oh, God, yeah.
The 08 Phillies, a little better defensively than the 09 Yankees, but yes.
Mm-hmm.
07 Red Sox, not really a defensive juggernaut.
No.
06 Cards.
Cardinals. They had Pujols,
and that was kind of a weird year. I guess maybe that would be the one you point to, but over and over again, we've seen that. the defense thing has become a thing that's taken off the last couple of years because they have all these cool stats now, and people are saying this is the new wrinkle to Moneyball, and this is, you know, once upon a time you could get OBP guys and pitch count guys at a really good value, and then everybody figured that part out. So people move to defense. It's like, well, here's now where the value is, guys who save runs.
UZR, whatever, that's the big hot stat, right?
Here's the catch, though. It seems like it's a way for teams that don't have a lot of money to spend to get bargains and maybe go a little better than what you would think they would on paper. Like, for instance, last year's Mariners.
Right.
Which they tinkered with the lineup. They had a bunch of defensive guys, and they scored less runs but somehow won more games.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you do that when you're a 95-win team.
Or, yeah, not when you're expected to be.
And using a gimmick, it's almost like I would compare it to the press in basketball, where it's a gimmick. And you're like, I'm going to use this gimmick, so we're going to be better than people think we are. But when you're a 95-win team, I don't know if you use gimmicks. Unless this is just the direction baseball's going, and it's pitching the defense, and that's just the way it is.
I mean, it could be. I mean, I guess to a degree, the Yankees unfortunately followed that too, in that they, you know, went with Granderson instead of Damon, basically, who's arguably a worse hitter, but is better, clearly better defensively. I mean, the Yankees wanted to get younger too. They were trying to do some different things, but maybe Theo is like ahead of the zeitgeist here of the wave of the future.
Well, I know what he's doing. I mean, he's basically guys who work pitch counts and get on base, and then guys who can field the ball.
Yeah, definitely.
So, with good pitching. It's just hard for me to believe that team could win a World Series.
The thing is, but the part that doesn't make sense about their plan, and I mean, I guess plans can change, but if that's your plan, then why didn't you re-sign Alex Gonzalez? Why did you go get Marco Scudero?
Well, Marco Scudero was good last year defensively, apparently.
Yeah, but isn't Alex Gonzalez like one of the best fielding shortstops in baseball?
I don't know. I'm
sorry. I didn't mean to bum you out there.
And it's not... Victor Martinez is actually better than advertised behind the plate, but he's not Johnny Bench.
He can't throw anybody out, though.
Yeah.
The old cliche, he calls a good game.
Confused by the team. It just seems to me like this team that will do very well during the regular season, and we're going to get into a playoff series, and nobody will be able to get the big hit.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't see a clutch hit, and I don't see any pop. Who's going to knock one out when you're down three runs, you know, or you're down 3-0? Who's putting one out of the park tied up?
Unfortunately, we need a big comeback year from J.D. Drew.
Sure.
Nancy. And we need a big comeback year from Adrian Beltre.
Yeah. And from Big Poppy. He needs to be more consistent this year.
Gus emailed me and said, well, the one thing is, you know, Beltre's good in the contract year. And I was like, well, apparently not. He was awful last year.
Right.
I think we can throw that one out the window, too.
Now that everybody's harping on some injury because he had bone spurs removed. But he did have 449 at-bats.
And then it's like, well, now that he's out of Safeco, his power totals will go up. And it's like, well, he hit 189 at Fenway.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Plus, I understand he played 81 games at Safeco, but he also had 81 games or however many games he played on the road. He still hit 8 home runs. Not every game was at Safeco.
The thing that
Hasn't he been an enormous bust in Seattle, though? Like,
enormous.
Much better things expected of him.
Somehow I know, like, 3 Seattle fans. All of them gleefully emailed me yesterday. Or whenever it happened. Like, hey, good luck with that. It was like I just bought,
really?
bought this house that had like the poltergeist pool outside. Good luck with the poltergeist pool.
I mean, he was like really a huge bust out there. They were expecting big things from him in Seattle.
To say the least.
Now, his home run year was in 2004 when he had the 48 homers. I mean, that's the Brady Anderson category right there, obviously, with his 51. I mean,
the Dodgers had a couple suspicious years considering the era. The Gagne having 373 straight saves, whatever it was.
Right, yeah.
I was kidding. It was, I think it was like,
no, it wasn't, yeah, but whatever. Yeah, a ridiculous amount,
But, I mean, the word in the street with Beltre was always that he had his one huge year in the contract year. And this is something that guys had been doing over and over again. All of a sudden, their stats would jump in a contract year, and he'd be like, oh, look what that guy did.
What's the guy in the Dominican that they all, quote-unquote, train with, Angel Presnal or whatever? I think he might have been friends with him that year. He might have been working out at his facility.
Manny Roydenes?
Exactly. Right.
But here's the rub, is that I've always enjoyed Adrian Beltre. I've always tried to trade for him. So I can't get over the fact that he's a Red Sox.
That's exciting for you, because he'll be on your fantasy team and your real-life team. And that'll be good for you.
I look at the lineup, and it just seems like there's a lot of, oh, this guy's up. There's two guys on, but, oh, this guy's coming up.
Yeah,
a lot of those moments.
And really, and this is probably overrated, you and I harp on this, but no personality on that team. Could they be more robotic? Except for Victor Martinez doing handshakes, but it's going to be tough for him to come up with 24 handshakes on that team. I don't know. I mean, just as a Yankee fan, I would be honest with you, that lineup doesn't scare me in the slightest. Not even like a little bit. I don't get a little bit nervous. It used to be when Big Papi would come up and Manny, I'd be legitimately scared.
Yeah.
Now I'm not even like nothing. I'm not even like moderately frightened.
Not bad, Marcus Guerrero.
He's not making me nervous. Hopefully you're taping this and can play it back when they beat the Yankees 18-0 in the first game of the year in April.
Well, here's a good example. Like if we pull off an Adrian Gonzalez trade.
Yeah, that would make me nervous.
Well, not only make you nervous, but I would get emails from the Padres fans saying, hey, good luck with this guy. I watched him for the last 5 years. You're going to love him.
Right.
He's great. I'm so bummed out that we didn't get to keep him.
Right.
I want to sign that guy.
Yeah.
I want to trade for that guy. I want to trade for the guy that the other team's fans send me the gushing email about. And like when we got KG from Minnesota and my email box filled up with Minnesota emails from people saying, this guy is special. You have no idea what it's like to watch him play every day. Let's sign that guy.
Kind of like the Yankees did with Curtis Granderson, where everybody talked about what a universal good guy he was, you know? I don't know any Tigers fans. I didn't get any emails from Detroit, but, you know, like that was a similar occurrence.
Similar with the players, but with the fans, I don't think anybody was that attached
to
Granderson. The other part that's bizarre is, so now we're going to pay $21 million, or 22. I forget what Lowell makes.
He makes 12.
So we'll pay $22 million next year to Mike Lowell and Adrian Beltre.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you were paying $9 million to Lowell a couple weeks ago to ship him off to Texas when there was no seeming importance of having to get rid of him, and now every team in baseball knows you have no place to play Mike Lowell, you literally have to just give him away, I don't think that $9 million price that you were going to eat is going down.
I like the Beltre contract, I got to say. I mean, to
only
have
deal.
That guy for 1 year and then with the option.
Yeah, $5 million player option. That's solid.
Thought it was a good gamble.
Right.
But on top of all the other stuff they've done, it's like watching a fantasy league where the guy next to you keeps drafting. You know, it takes three quarterbacks in the first eight picks. You're like, wow, this is interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, he took the running back coming back from the torn ACL. That's an interesting gamble. But then you look at the end of the day, and it's like, wow, that guy's got a lot of gambles. He needs a lot of stuff to come through.
I mean, the Sox did maybe everything will come up roses for him this year in terms of gambling, because last year they gambled on Penny and they gambled on Smoltz, and it came up snake eyes. So maybe this year
they gambled on guys who are at least going to play.
Yeah, the gambles weren't as big this year, and maybe karma, the gambling gods will come through and some of their gambling will work out this year. Maybe Mike Cameron will hit more than 8 home runs and not strike out 170 times.
Can you go the pitching defense route when you're playing 81 games a year in Fenway?
Well, it's just it. I mean, Fenway, it's an offensive park. Teams score runs. I don't care how well you pitch. I mean, they play the Yankees in Fenway. Every game is like 10-9, whoever wins it.
I, by the way, I say that as somebody who grew up with idiot GMs who tried to go offense first in Fenway and failed year after year and after year.
Yeah, just got mashers, right.
I'm saying, like, it seems like if you're going pitchy defense, you'd kind of want to do it in a place like Safeco or where Oakland plays.
Yeah, exactly. Where they're, yeah.
Not a place that has...
foul area.
You're doing it in Fenway 81 games a year. Fenway has foul ball territory that's about 5 feet. It's got a giant wall in left field. I don't know. It's a place you'd kind of want to go if you're a hitter.
It's about 280 feet down right field, the pesky pole. It's 314 to left. I mean, what if you go out there and John Lackey has a bad game someday and all of a sudden you're down 7-0? I mean, you can pack that game in.
Yeah, there's not going to be a lot of come from behind potential with this team.
No.
I mean,
pop.
I guess the key, unfortunately, sadly, tragically, the key is JD Drew.
Oh, yikes.
And, you know, on a lesser scale, whether Pedroia can be 2008 Pedroia, not 2009 Pedroia.
Right.
But they need a borderline career year from J.D. Drew.
Phew. That's troubling.
Because right now you have Victor 3. You have Euclid 4. Ortiz 5. I don't know where Ortiz goes now. And what do we expect from him? You know, he did end up with, like, whatever. You know, I think, like, 28 home runs.
28 home runs, I think, yeah. Which were all hit, basically, after June 1st.
Yeah. But he, you know, it was one of those Dave Kingman seasons.
Yeah.
Where he...
What did he hit last year, like 230?
It might have even been 228.
Yeesh.
But he was under the Mendoza for a long time.
Not getting any younger.
It'll be interesting. I mean, I'm not crazy about it. I don't think the team will be that fun to watch. I'm going to be looking at a lot of 3-2 games.
Yeah.
But I think I would have done a couple things differently. And Lord knows that opinion matters because I'm not a baseball GM.
And given really the state of the free agent market this year where it was kind of a down year for free agents, I mean, I think they were smart not to overpay for Jason Bay, although I think they're gonna miss his 36-120.
Yeah, I was happy with that.
I think the Jason Bay signing for the Mets was ironically a free agent signing that's going to hurt both teams. Because I think he's going to be awful for the Mets, and the Mets fans are going to be like,
the Mets, they needed power. I think they're he's in a tough division for pitchers all of a sudden. But
right.
But I don't know. It was an okay. I mean, everybody's overpaid by 25%. So yeah. They got him for $16 million a year for 4 years.
Right, but isn't there some option where it can go up to, it can almost be worth $80 million somehow?
Yeah.
It's a little pricey for Jason Bay. Yikes. In a cavernous ballpark. That's a little pricey.
Was anybody happy with their offseason? Can you find me the fan base that said, I love what my baseball team did?
No, that's a good point. Maybe that's it. Maybe everybody, you know, all the big teams are still right where they were last year. I mean, I'm so bummed out about Johnny Damon's departure. I'm so bummed out about the Javier Vasquez trade. I loathe Nick Johnson, so I can't say I'm really excited. And the Curtis Granderson thing, I'm like, flip a coin, I don't know.
My friend Mendelson, from the guy who runs my AL Keeper League, who's also in an NL league and knows more about baseball and all the minutiae than anybody I know, he thought the Yankee trade for Vasquez was great.
For the Yankees?
Yeah, he just said that. He said that guy was a top 4 or 5 starter in the NL last year.
And in quadruple A.
So, yeah, on paper, that's solid, but two problems. One is that inferior league, and then two, you had him. You already had him.
And didn't care for him.
Not only did not care for him, but serious questions about whether he could handle New York, right?
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
I thought he was your best pitcher in the 04 ALCS that headed down the stretch. What was the game when he came in? What was the game when he came in and he was doing really well?
Unfortunately, because of shock therapy and some heavy-duty medication, I have no recollection of the 2004 season. I'm afraid I can't tell you anything that happened.
I'm going to say
year.
It was Game 5. One of those extra-inning games of Fenway, 4 or 5, he came in and was lights out for like 3-4 innings.
I'll take your word for it. I don't recall.
I don't remember. You might have sucked in Game 7. I was so drunk and happy that I can't remember anything that happened.
Actually there in Game 7 and saw him give up his... Grand slam to Johnny Damon.
Oh, so. Yeah, you're right. He did suck. What am I saying? I forgot. No, it wasn't. He didn't start the game.
No, Kevin Brown started the game, I think.
He gave up the grand slam to Johnny Damon, didn't he?
No, Vasquez did.
Really?
I think Kevin Brown made it like two. It was 2-0 before I even like sat in my seat. And then Javi Vasquez came in and gave up a grand slam to Johnny Damon.
Joe Mead, can you look this up? Joe Mead?
Joe's taking a lunch break at the moment.
Hey, what's going on?
Joe is so riveted.
I'm listening to Joe House.
Joe Mead had just taken his three guns out and made Jay Soderbergh pick one of them. We were trying to figure out if Javi Vasquez pitched well in the 2004 ALCS.
I'm going to say he did.
What his game log was. Now, I think Jacko was right, though. He was really good in the series and then gave up the grand slam to Damon.
Right.
So I think my theory's out. But anyway, so did you get rid of him the next year?
Yeah, he was traded to Arizona in the offseason for Randy Johnson.
That's right. Yeah, that trade didn't work out.
No, it did not.
So you're not as enthusiastic about the second go-around with Javi?
Not even a little bit. And I liked Melky Cabrera. I realized I was in the minority there, but I liked Melky. I thought he was a fire plug, you know? He got things started, spark plug, some kind of a plug. And insert your own joke there. And I thought he was good for the Yanks. I liked Melky. I was sad to see him go. And plus there's, you know, questions about Javi Vasquez's makeup after, what's his name, Ozzie Guillen called him out. Basically said he had, like, no guts or, you know, no cojones or something. And
oh, yeah.
Wouldn't trust him in a big game. And, you know, he didn't even, like, respond in any way.
Forgot about that. Yeah, so we're both unhappy.
Pretty much, yeah.
I think I'm a little more unhappy than, I mean, I'm a little less unhappy than you are because the Red Sox didn't do anything that ranked with letting Johnny Damon go. Every Yankee fan I know is outraged about that.
It's an absolute outrage. And the Nick Johnson thing is an underrated outrage because the whole theory in letting Hideki Matsui go, and I'm not going to be a phony for once, but because I was never a big Hideki Matsui fan, but he signed for what, like $6.5-7 million? And the whole notion of, well, we can't have Hideki Matsui there clogging up the DH spot because we want to use it to give, you know, A-Rod a spell and a blow and, you know, Teixeira once in a while and Jeter, and we're just going to use that as an open spot to circulate guys out of the lineup.
Yeah.
Then they go out and sign Nick Johnson, who has nowhere else to play, is worse offensively than Hideki Matsui by a long shot, and cost like $1.5 million less, which in Yankee money is like 25 cents.
I have some good news for you.
Yeah?
He's going to be hurt the entire time you have him, so it's not going to matter. You'll still have that DH spot wide open for him.
That's an excellent point.
He's not clogging it for anybody. You know what he's clogging? The injured list. At the training room, wherever the doctor is. He's hogging that room.
Absolutely.
He's going to make Derek Jeter mad because he wants to get his hammy rubbed down. He's going to be waiting outside the door. Who's in there? Nick Johnson again. God damn it. Why'd we sign him?
I know. I despise that. I really was not crazy about that trade.
Did anyone do anything in the American League that made you nervous?
I'm trying to think now. Like, what did teams do? I'm trying to remember.
Nobody really. I mean, there's really not a lot going on.
No. No, there was nothing.
Toronto somehow turned Roy Halladay into guys I've never heard of.
You know who upgraded was the Mariners, getting Cliff Lee to go with King Felix.
That's the one team I was thinking. But now it seems like, you know, they're on the fence whether they try to move Felix before July 31st. But, I mean, if they just try to make a run for it this year, that could be a pretty scary team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the balance of power out west shifted because, you know, the Angels lost Lackey and they lost Sean Figgins. And the Phillies, I mean, the Mariners have greatly upgraded their pitching staff. Hmm.
Maybe it's the Mariners. If the Reds, back to the Red Sox for a second, if they're going to take gambles, which I feel like they did with the Beltre signing to some degree, not a contractual gamble, but a gamble that you're now adding into the list of guys that you want to have a much better year. So now we have Dice, J.D. Drew, and Beltre. And I guess you'd have to throw Ortiz in there.
Mm.
See, four guys that you're paying probably more than a third of our payroll this year. And in each case, you don't know if the guy is going to have a bounce back or not. You're hoping. But you might go for four.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a coin flip. It's a crapshoot.
It's a coin flip. Would you say it's a coin flip?
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes me nervous. I don't like being nervous. We have a $170 million payroll. Why should I be nervous about the guys on the team?
I mean, that's the other interesting thing is I never want to hear another Red Sox fan talk about, you know, the Yankees buying World Series or spending a lot of money. Because you guys are the Yankees now.
All right, let's get to the real stuff. This is all foreplay. Jersey Shore.
Yes, sir.
Are you caught up?
Oh God, yeah. We spent New Year. We had a party at my house on New Year's Eve, and right after we watched Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve or whatever, and watched the ball drop at midnight, I immediately put in the hit the old DVR button, and we gathered around and watched that night's episode of the Jersey Shore.
It's a New Year's tradition.
It really is a great way to. What better way to ring in 2010?
I have a plan for Jersey Shore going forward because I don't think they can go back to the Jersey Shore because they're real celebrities now.
Right.
I think the Jersey Shore cast, the next move, logical move, is they move them to either Hollywood or South Beach.
Nice.
Somewhere a little more ritzy.
Yeah.
Because now they've had a taste of Hollywood and their makeup. Like JWoww actually looks like semi-human now.
Yeah.
And Snooki,
well,
I don't want to call her attractive, but more attractive than she was in the show. But now you move them to a place where they will remain outcasts.
Okay.
And I think that is either Malibu or South Beach. Malibu would be tough because there's no bars, so maybe you put them in Manhattan Beach.
Okay.
And basically the same show, but they're like fish out of water now. They're in, this South Beach, I can't figure it out. We're at the Delano, and, you know, and Paul, they wouldn't let Paulie in because he was wearing a sweater that didn't have a collar. And, I feel like this could keep going. And so then after that one, year three, they go to like Rome or Barcelona. Now we take them out of the country. We
move
to a foreign country where they're even more outcast. Maybe London.
The one problem is putting them in a foreign country might lead to war with the United States. We already have Afghanistan and Iraq. I'm not sure we need to go to war with like Italy or Spain.
So
I want something where they have to like solve mysteries or like solve problems.
Solve problems? Like what
kind
of problems?
Yeah, like some sort of a, I don't know, like somewhere, you know, where they're put like on an obstacle course, like kind of on the real world Road Rules Challenge thing, but it involves like, you know, the things where you have to put together like a puzzle on there?
Right.
Like just watching them as a team try to put something together. Wouldn't that be hilarious?
So you're saying if they had the Jersey Shore cast compete against like 7 real world Road Rules people?
Right, like in Celebrity Jeopardy or something.
Oh, Celebrity, in a spelling bee.
Yeah.
And all kinds of stuff. The point is this. The show is going to end because I think they only spent 30 days there. So there's only like 8-9 shows total, maybe 10. And then these people are going to go out of our lives for a prolonged period of time. I'm not willing to accept that.
No, it's not fair. It's they need to bring it back in some way. There's got to be some sequel. I can't live without them.
So where would you
I read online where they are getting $10,000 each in appearance fees or trying to. It's a great country, America, isn't it?
Probably getting them.
Yeah, it's a great country. God bless America.
I mean, you turn 40 next year. I think your wife should splurge $10,000 for the situation.
I'm partial to Pauly D. I want him to DJ the party.
That's true. You get Pauly D to be the DJ. You actually also get some aesthetic value out of it.
Because for $10,000, I don't want him just to stand around. I want him to like spin some records.
So the first 4 episodes, I guess the big controversy was whether the situation helped or saw the Snooki punch and why he didn't react in a more violent manner.
Yeah, that was a bone of contention in the last episode. Yeah, a quandary, as it were. Mm-hmm.
And Ronnie, the roided up midget.
Yeah.
He was just furious that the situation didn't have Snooki's back.
See, I think part of that though was his further efforts to solidify his relationship with Sammy by further throwing the situation under the bus. Although he's already sealed the deal, as it were. So I'm not sure that he really needs to solidify things any further, but just in an excess of caution, he wanted to continue to denigrate the situation. That's what it was really all about. That's how I read it.
It's been an ongoing situation.
It has been an ongoing situation.
I think my favorite moment of the first 4 episodes was the whole grenade situation with the ugly friend.
Yeah, that was good. I liked that.
It was just one of the – I would put that 8 or 9 minutes against any 8 or 9 minutes in television history.
Undoubtedly.
How great it was. I've never related more to a situation in a reality show. Like, we've all been there. But I think number 2 for me was the mom waiting for Sammy, sweetheart, to get ready. Ronnie's mom.
That was a good one.
Smoking the cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
At like 9:30 in the morning with that, just, it was just, I was dying. I rewound it like 5 times.
That was like Real Housewives of New Jersey in microcosm or something, yeah.
It was like, hey, Ronnie, no offense, but the Sammy sweetheart situation, look at your mom. That's where it's headed in about 25 years.
Oh, God, yeah. That's the best he could hope for. Are you kidding me?
Chain smoking on a lawn chair.
Oh, no question about it. Oh, God, yeah. Hey, let's take a good look at your future, my friend.
With that said, I find Sammy sweetheart very attractive.
She is. She is. Of course,
she is
on that cast, it's a little bit like, you know, tallest mountain in Kansas, but still.
It's like putting LeBron James in the 2007 Cavaliers.
That's right. Wow, that guy LeBron's really good. Yeah,
stands out big time.
Right.
Any other thoughts?
I'm trying to think what else happened on the Jersey Shore of late. Nothing, really. I liked when they cooked the lobsters and Snooki said she used to work in a vet's office and protested. That was touching. That was like emotional stuff right there.
The situation, I think, he's a Hall of Fame roommate because he cooks.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I think that pushes it over the top. Like, not only can he can he score some of the ladies?
Right.
Kind of get the house going that way, but he also can make food for people.
Yeah, and he's the only one because he had the other idiot try to light a gas grill, and he put charcoal in it and almost burned the house down. So, really, the fact that he can...
I forgot about that. That might be my number three moment.
The fact that he can be in a kitchen without harming himself or others, right there, he's ahead of the game.
I'd like to move that above Ronnie's mom smoking the cigarette as my number two favorite moment.
Okay.
Light a fluid on the grill. That was great. So where do you see this going and ending up?
Well, I don't know. Just more greatness, more adventures, and then you know the last episode will be a teary eyed sausage and pepper dinner where they all proclaim their undying love for one another and proclaim themselves a family about 47 times. And I'll be teary eyed at home watching it too. I'm not going to lie to you.
Did you watch The Real World DC?
I did not. No. I bailed on the Real World Cancun, and the DC one, I was afraid the conservatives would be too much of a cartoon character that it would only aggravate me.
So oh, and it would. Away. If you could do me a favor for 2010, could you watch it?
Well, of course. Of course I will. I mean, I'm intrigued, like a car crash that you can't look away from, but I knew it was going to anger me because they were going to have just, you know, some... Well, I won't go into what they were going to have, but they were going to have somebody that didn't portray conservatism in the best light.
They're going to have a couple liberals that might rub you the wrong way.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
Anybody like Judd from San Francisco?
Worse.
Oof. You're really asking a lot of me then.
Yeah, worse.
Yikes.
All right, Johnny. Well.
All right, buddy.
Thanks for walking me through the Beltray thing. I appreciate it.
I'm here for you.
All right.
Later.
So I get to sign off.
Whoa. Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
You laughed, you cried, you turned up the sound repeatedly, and now it's all over. This concludes another installment of the BS Report. And with all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just-breaking news. Subway is home to the famous $5 footlong, so celebrate your favorite Subway famous $5 footlong, like the classic BLT or the Big Bowl Black Forest ham and cheese. All stacked your way with the meats, cheeses, and fresh crisp veggies you love.